Well, let me welcome you back here to Systematically Wild, and I'm glad to bring back in Kevin Loco as we talk about things going on without the and throughout the Minnesota Wild organization. And Kevin, man, just we're in April now, so we're just a couple of weeks away from the season coming to an end, and I think that midnight is struck and Cinderella is really in a bad spot here if you're a Minnesota Wild fan.
I think so. I think the Death Star was probably the overtime loss to the Vegas Golden Knights, where John Hines played Riverboat Gambler again, and this time it did not work out. But, you know, even if it did, I just think with the state the team's in right now, I did not see a big winning streak that was going to get them back into it. So, you know, these guys are pros. They're going to give it all every game. They're going to believe they have a chance, but, you know, in all reality, it's looking like the first non-playoff season since the 2018-2019 season.
You know, and it's hard to think about a team that had such a great run last season, Kevin. So many big-time scorers. I think there was six guys that had 30 goals last year on the club, and it seemed like they were just primed to create some offense, but you have some, you know, trades you have to make to get under the salary cap and some guys you have to let get away from the organization. You're counting on Gustavsson to replicate what he did last year. And, you know, there was a lot of things I think you're wishing would come to fruition and just didn't wind up materializing for them, especially early on. And so it's not surprising that they struggled a little bit here, but it is disappointing.
It is. You know, to an extent, injuries can be an excuse, but I do think underperformance was also, and who knows you know, just like we find out after the playoffs, we'll find out after the regular season that maybe a lot of guys were battling through stuff throughout the season, and that may be why they had struggled. Marcus Foligno is out for the rest of the season with the same core injury that he suffered last season that required surgery. So he just had surgery on Tuesday, so he is out for the rest of the year. And, you know, it's just been injuries continually throughout the club at separate times during the year, and just never really seemed like you had your full allotment of players. I mean, you had guys like Jake Lucchini and Vinny Lettieri, who should have been regulars in Iowa, that were mainstays on the fourth line through the second half of the season. So just was not meant to be for this Wild club this year.
Very true. Well, let's begin on Thursday night, Kevin, with a 3-1 victory over San Jose. It is Joel Eriksson Ek scoring his 30th goal of the season in the first period to make it 1-0. San Jose is able to tie the score in the second, but Matt Boldy scores his 25th goal of the season in the third. That proves to be the game winner just 18 seconds into the period. Boldy with a goal and an assist in the game. Kaprizov with his second assist of the night on that goal, Kevin. And the team all of a sudden comes away with a big victory thanks to Boldy.
Yeah, it was a lot closer than it should have been against a team like San Jose that's playing out the string. And that's what you know, after the game, that's what you're thinking. But then the Sharks go into St. Louis on Saturday night and shut out the Blues. So, you know, maybe they were a little tougher out than we thought they should have been.
Ryan Hartman gets an empty net goal to close out the scoring. Kevin Gustavsson with an assist on the play there. So not only got the win in the game, but added a point for himself at the same time.
And you know those goalies like to get on the score sheet like that. So
absolutely. 26 saves in the game for Gustavsson. A nice performance by him, who's had a little bit of a rocky performance over the last couple of weeks, but really looked sharp in this game. For, as you mentioned, for a San Jose team that went out and had a very gritty victory on Saturday in St. Louis. So the Sharks, you know, I mean, you look at the record and go, wow, this team is just absolutely terrible. But they've had a lot of fairly close games in recent weeks. And so it's not a team that's rolling over by any stretch of the imagination.
No, it's not. And, you know, as I've talked about before, sometimes when teams are out of it, they play a little looser and the pressure's off and you get better results.
On Saturday, a 2-1 loss to the Vegas Golden Knights in overtime. I still don't understand why a team would do this, but okay, here we are anyway, so we'll just roll with it from this point. So Kaprizov scores his 37th goal of the season. Matt Boldy with an assist on that goal on the power play, Kevin. At least these guys are really performing well down the stretch. And while you say, well, it's not because the team's going to be making the playoffs, but it's not meaningless to these players. So they're still trying to go out there and do the best that they can to help keep this team going and, you know, to bolster their own stats and finish with a strong finish for the season here.
You know, they make hockey cards too, and guys like to see the good numbers on them.
Absolutely. Vegas ties the score in the third. Then, as Kevin mentioned, the Wild roll the dice and decide to pull their goaltender looking for the win in overtime, but unfortunately give up the empty net tally 3:30 into the extra session to fall 2-1. I know you want to win the game. I still just don't understand why you would give up that point, take the risk of giving up the point. But, I mean, again, if Vegas got nothing, if you scored on that, I would totally be in favor of that. I just don't really understand the rolling the dice that way.
Well, one point, if they end up losing to Vegas and they've in like a regular overtime or a shootout, then they've lost yet another point to Vegas. So, and then,
yeah.
But the thing is, Vegas has been hot. So now the team you're chasing were the Kings. And, you know, then the Kings went on to lose on Saturday night in Calgary. So that's where the second guessers are going in and saying, well, wait a minute, the Kings are the team you're chasing, and you just gave up. You threw away a point to them. So I see both sides of it. And like I said, frankly, I think we're kind of kidding ourselves if we thought Minnesota was going to be making a big run at the end of the year to make the playoffs anyway.
Yeah, very true. So, you know, it is what it is kind of thing. As Kevin and I are talking, Minnesota is tied with Ottawa 2-2 here. So that contest will likely be over before Kevin and I finish the show, and we can talk about it a little bit before we end here.
Yeah, we'll give you a final, even though you're going to – the game will be like a few days old by the time you hear the show anyway.
So the Wild at 35-29-9, Kevin, 79 points. They are 73 games, 74th tonight here. As Kevin mentioned, 8 points behind the Los Angeles Kings right now, who also have played 74 games. That's a lot of games to try to make up and a lot of points to try to make up in 8 games, and that just seems like a bridge too far, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and after the game that we're watching right now, you got Colorado at home, but then you're going on the road for 5 games before you get one last home game. It's just not a situation where I could see this team racking up a bunch of wins in a row to make a playoff chase. So, frankly, I think they're just kind of playing the string out right now.
At Colorado on Thursday, Winnipeg on Saturday, then you go on the road to San Jose.
Oh, yeah, once again, not another picnic with the Jets coming to town, too.
Yeah, so you're looking at those final 8 games, you're talking about, what, 5 games are against playoff teams? That's those are the games you got to win. I mean, eventually, if you're going on to a cup championship, but still, that's probably not the best stretch you want closing out the season. So, down to the AHL club, Kevin, as they go, they're, I think, what playoff run, maybe it is officially over, but it's over. A 4-3 loss in overtime to Milwaukee on Tuesday at home, then travel to Texas where they come away with a huge victory on Friday night, 4-3, but drop Saturday's contest 2-1.
Yeah, you have to like to play a little better. They're staying in games, though it seemed like they were pretty lifeless on Saturday night down in Texas. I mean, only getting one goal on a guy that's making his pro debut straight out of college, you thought maybe that was an opportunity where you could light somebody up and get a rare sweep in Texas, but it was not meant to be. And so just don't see this team, same as Minnesota, I don't see this team get on any kind of a run to get a playoff spot either.
Well, Kevin and I were talking about this game last Tuesday while we were recording the show. It was a 3-1 Wild lead when they scored two goals in the second period, but they gave up two in the third to allow Milwaukee to tie the score, forcing overtime. And that is where the Admirals come out with a victory. And we're not going to go too much into the detail about this game because we did last week. But Jesper Wallstedt stopped 29 of 33 shots in the game. I mean, that really kind of set the tone for the week. Because I'm thinking, man, you've got Milwaukee. You're 3-1 lead. You're looking like you're in great shape. And then you wind up giving that game away. I mean, excuse the term giving away. But they Milwaukee comes back to battle to win the game. And I just thought, wow, this. I mean, that's just a microcosm of the Iowa Wild this season.
I think so. It's a, you know, it's such a young team that, and when you have had the kind of season they had, it's very frail. You know, you have a 3-1 lead, you give up a goal or two, and you're like, oh gosh, here we go again. Instead of, hey, let's just get it back. So it's just been a synopsis of the way the entire season has gone. And you know, we'll get back. Going back to Minnesota, we're talking about Lucchesi and Lettieri. How different is this Iowa Wild team if you have both of those guys in Iowa for the entire year? If you had Jujhar Khaira, it's been kind of forgotten about, but they haven't had him since November. He was a key part of that team when he was with the team earlier in the season. So it's been a... As bad as injuries have been in Minnesota, the trickle-down effect has also affected Iowa, and that, unfortunately, it's just been one of those years for the Wild down there.
Well, nice rebound on Friday. Despite the tough loss against Milwaukee at home, they travel to Texas, facing Matthew Murray, which has been a nightmare for this club, but they come away with a 4-3 victory. If they had 3-1 goal leads in this game, the Stars continue the battle back to tie the game, but it is Caden Banquier scoring the power play goal at 14:58, and Wallstedt making that stand. Stopping 30 of 33 shots in a 4-3 victory. Turner Elson with his scores two goals in the game. Regardless of how the season winds up, you got to look long term and think to yourself, Matthew Murray is going to be in your way at some point next season, even if it's for a shorter time before he gets a chance to move up to the big club. You got to prove that you can beat this guy.
Yeah, it was, it finally kind of showed that Murray was human. And I think if you're looking for a positive this season with Iowa, one of the guys you mentioned there, Caden Bank here, has been a guy that is really taking advantage of his ice time with the Wild to show the organization that he could be a part of the big club at some point.
He may never move up to the big club, but I like the overall play of Stephen Fogarty too, Kevin. I think he's Nick Petan with not as much scoring touch, but a little more grit to him. And I think he could be a guy that's around here for 2 or 3 years and just helps Iowa to be better. You know, maybe he never winds up getting that shot with a Minnesota club, but I like his game, to be honest with you.
Yeah, he's what I would call, if it was baseball, a 4A player that just didn't quite have that it factor to make a NHL career out of it, but AHL is a much better fit for him. And yeah, you know, he's been one of the guys, I think he's been healthy for the most part the entire season, so.
Yes. On Saturday, Texas scores goals in the first and second periods to take a 2-0 lead. Sammy Walker scores his 14th goal of the season with a little over 4 minutes left in the contest to make it 2-1, but they could not get the equalizer. Jesper Wallstedt looked pretty good in this game, stopped 36 shots, but he's outplayed by the rookie, as you mentioned, Kevin, and that's just, sometimes, you know, you get these guys out of college, you don't know anything about their game, and it's really hard to battle against a guy like that, because you don't know how he positions himself and stuff, so just a tough loss for the Wild.
That's true, you don't really have that much of a book, and you gotta imagine the kid is pretty dang excited to begin his professional career. So, you know, give him credit. He got the win on the Wild on Saturday night.
I hate to use this word, Kevin, but I think it, if you're an Iowa Wild fan, after what you saw last season, you have to think 14 goals for Sammy Walker. His season has been very disappointing.
Well, I'd like to point that Michael Russo of The Athletic brought up earlier in the year with Walker is that Walker was someone who benefited greatly from being a line mate of Marco Rossi in Iowa last year, and he didn't have that sort of support. And matter of fact, due to injuries, the line continuity just wasn't there at all this season. So I think that's why we saw the drop-off with Walker.
Well, that leaves Iowa this heading into this week, Kevin, at 24-34 and 6-54 points. They are 7 points behind Manitoba for the fifth and final playoff spot. This week they will welcome Hershey on Friday and Saturday. Maybe not officially eliminated, but long way away.
Yeah, Hershey, I was looking up their win-loss record at home and on the road, and I think win-loss-wise, they may be the best team in the AHL. They're making their first appearance in Iowa. So, but, you know, the Wild played them pretty tough in Hershey earlier this year. But I think your headline this weekend is going to be Liam Ogren is going to be making his debut, you would imagine, at some point. I don't know if he'll play Friday and Saturday or just Saturday, but he was the first-round pick the Wild got in the Kevin Fiala trade, and it sounds like Ogren's going to finish the year with the Wild, so it'll be interesting to see how he looks with the NHL-like level. He was playing in a Swedish Elite League this season, so it'll be his first test in pro hockey.
I believe you'll be out at that game too. Is that true?
Yeah, I'll be either at both of them or at least the Saturday night one. So I think it depends on if Ogren is in the lineup. I'll try to catch both games. If not, I will be at the Saturday night tilt.
On Friday, realistically, Iowa women's basketball team playing, I think, in the Final Four on Friday night there. So probably not going to be a particularly large crowd there on hand.
Yeah, 8:30 tip-off, too. So I got to imagine the bars in Des Moines will be hopping pretty good from happy hour all the way up to tip-off. So could be a sparse turnout. Could be some – we won't see it in the actual attendance numbers, but might be a fair deal of no-shows.
Yeah, which is sad because there are some good things to like about what the Iowa Wild are doing right now. So, and what's going on with the club? Dropping down to the ECHL, a tough week against Kansas City, but I'm going to say it. I'm not a huge moral victory person, especially for a club that is in their third season, closing out their third season right now. But Kansas City is just a machine right now, and despite losing all three of those games on the road in every game, Kevin. A one-goal loss on Wednesday, two-goal loss on both Friday and Saturday against a very potent Kansas City offense. I think that there's a lot to take away from that and go, man, we're playing better defensively and we're getting very solid goaltending.
And it's a Heartlanders team right now, too, that they are playing with some guys that really haven't played a lot this year, kind of a makeshift lineup, but they've put out three pretty good games over the weekend.
Absolutely. So on the Wednesday game, they fall behind 1-0 on a Casey Carew goal, a power play goal, his third of the year, 13-11 into the contest. Patrick Curry and Max Andreev score to make it 3-0. It looked like you're just going to get brutalized here in Independence, but Brett Budgell with his 13th goal of the season on the power play with a little over 3 minutes left in the contest, and Johnny Sorensen scoring with 2 seconds left, make it 3-2. The Sorensen goal, I guess, was kind of insignificant, but his second goal since five or six games in his career with the Iowa Heartlanders. Peyton Jones played pretty well, 18 saves and 21 shots against him. and that Kansas City seems very good. So what I took out of that was we were down 3-0, but we never gave up and at least made a close contest out of it.
It's good to see with Johnny Sorensen. Sorensen was with the University of Minnesota and really didn't have much of a chance to really shine as he was buried in the third, fourth lines, but he took advantage of the transfer portal to go to the University of Alaska and got to play big-time minutes for the Nanooks and got a chance to showcase his skills, and he's been able to bring it to the pro level, so I'm really happy for him to see him be successful early on.
On Friday night, Riley Hughes scores his first goal in a Heartlanders uniform, 10:56 into the contest, but it is Bradley Schoenbart scoring twice to give Kansas City the lead after two. Hunter Jones was started that game, was peppered 35 shots through the first two periods, came out after two periods. I wasn't sure if he was injured in that, Kevin, or if they, I don't know what the deal was, but it came out after the two periods. Jeremy McKenna scores his 19th goal to make it 3-1. Then Louis Boudon scores his 16th to cut the deficit back to one. But Jacob Hayhurst scores his 30th to give Kansas City the 4-2 victory. Peyton Jones came on for the final 18:36 of playing time in the third, stopped 10 of 12 shots. So Hunter Jones, man, a nice back-to-back performance after a big series closing victory against the Wichita Thunder last Sunday. Played well. Again, I'm not really sure about what the cause of him leaving the game early was.
I am not either. I know he got put on some reserve list. I don't know if that's injured reserve or just reserve so that Drew DeRitter could dress, because DeRitter came back to the Heartlanders from his stint with the Rochester Americans.
Yes, and that was on Saturday. Casey Dornbach scores 4:25 into the contest, and it is two goals by Patrick Curry. 1 8 minutes later in the first, he adds his second of the game, his 35th of the season, 3:03 into the third, and Kyle Jackson closes out the scoring with a power play goal, 8:42 into the third. Drew DeRitter returns, looked very good, stops 27 of 30 shots. So tough losses, all three, unfortunately, but team really continues to show that they're building towards something in the long run out there. They're not hanging their heads low, going, well, the season's over, and really giving the best performance that they can out there, Kevin, and that puts them right now at 26-32-8, 60 points, 4 points behind Cincinnati with six games left in the season. And as Kevin and I are talking here tonight, they will head to, or stay home, excuse me, to have Toledo for three games. Not really the matchup you want to try to finish strong here, but Toledo right now with 95 points. And maybe they're probably not going to catch Cincinnati at this point, Kevin. But, you know, the one thing to consider here is that they have a legitimate shot of staying out of last place. Actually, three teams in the Mountain Division are behind them right now. I mean, there's a lot to feel good about what's going on there in Coralville.
There is. And to totally get off the subject, another thing to feel good about in Coralville was the sale of the team last year, because the group that had owned the Heartlanders, along with Trois-Rivières and the Newfoundland, has ran into financial trouble, and the Newfoundland Growlers will not be finishing the season in the ECHL. So breathe easily, Heartlanders fans, because boy, that could have been the Heartlanders that may have folded. So the good news is they'll probably have their best record ever, and they are under solid ownership now.
Absolutely. And I know leagues have to absolutely hate this kind of stuff, because it looks bad when you're closing down a franchise for the remaining six games of the season. I mean, how do you explain that to fans that are there, to other ownership groups, to teams that are battling for playoff positions and things? Because out there in the East, you know, that's not completely decided. As a matter of fact, I'm going to pull up this this division right here. So in the North, you're looking at Newfoundland was in fifth place. Trois-Rivières was in third, still in third, I guess. So instantly now you put Maine into a situation where they would probably, you know, weren't going to be a playoff team, or now they're battling Worcester or something. So it's like this whole division is kind of chaotic now. And I know the ECHL has to just be shaking their head and pretty unhappy right now.
It's just a bad look in any league when you have a team full before the season ends. It just makes the entire league look bad, not just the franchise that wasn't able to make it. And they have to figure out a way, if you're ever going to try pro hockey in Newfoundland again, to make it economically feasible. Because right now, I was doing some reading on this, and Newfoundland was having to subsidize road teams travel to there because it's on such a outpost. And that, you know, that right there makes it a lot more difficult for your franchise to turn a profit. Their attendance was 22nd out of 28 teams. So, you know, they're not packing the arena. So it's just a real difficult business model. And if you're going to make it work, I don't know what you do if you find a way to subsidize the travel where the entire league pitches in so that they can have a team there or what. But now they've lost, I believe, two different AHL teams and now ECHL teams. So at this point, you just got to wonder, maybe pro hockey just isn't going to work in that market, not because of fan support, but because of geography.
Yeah, I believe that if I heard this correctly, there are only two flights that go to Newfoundland Airport there per day. And, I mean, that's just it. So, you know, if trying to get out there and you're either having to charter an airline or hope that there's enough room to get your team on one of those flights, and that can be extremely costly. So it's an interesting scenario there, Kevin, I guess. So. Well, let's jump back to the NHL here, Kevin, and talk a little bit about what's going on at the level here. And if you're an American person like Kevin and I are, exciting news that Jonathan Quick becomes the all-time goaltending winner for American-born hockey goaltenders.
Who did he pass to that? Mike Richter, maybe?
I think so, yeah. And that's right, yes.
Okay.
So pretty remarkable, yeah, pretty remarkable mark for this guy. He got a couple of Stanley Cup championships under his belt, too. So I mean, he definitely has proven to be the real deal out there. And, I mean, obviously overshadowed by everything Barkan Brodeur has done, but so is everybody. So nothing to go, my record isn't important, because that's a pretty big deal, I think. So I like it for him.
You know, Quick wasn't exactly a guy that was like a first-round pick either. He was out of, I believe he played college hockey for UMass and then joined the Kings out of college. Maybe he was drafted by LA, I'm not sure, but he wasn't exactly like someone that anyone had earmarked as being like a franchise goalie, but he has carved out quite a career for himself. And he kind of reinvented himself. We thought he was done, you know, last year with the Kings when he struggled, but he's played very well for the Rangers.
Yeah. You know what? And that kind of veteran leadership for a team, especially heading into the playoffs, is incredibly important. When you have a goaltender who's proven that he can win and is having a resurgence in his career, New York jumps to the top record out there in the East, Kevin. Are they the team that comes out of the East right now in your view, and is the Stanley Cup representative from that conference?
It's so hard to say right now. There's just so many good teams out East that it could be anybody. I mean, we saw last year Florida as an 8 seed made it all the way to the Stanley Cup, so I think it's a coin toss. But I think with Quick in the net, if I can remember right, Igor Shesterkin struggled in the playoffs last year for the Rangers, so I think having somebody like Quick around is going to be beneficial for the Rangers.
You know, it's impressive to consider, Kevin, Los Angeles probably isn't going to reach this market. They'd have, actually, I don't think they can at all. No, they can't. Okay, I mean, it would take an unbelievable run. But if Nashville, you know, won 5 of their final 8 games here, and Vegas were to do that as well, you could have 7 out of the 8 teams in that Western Conference have 100 points. I think that could be true of the East, with the exception of, no, Philadelphia and Washington. So you could have 6 out of the 8 in the East. That's pretty remarkable. That's teams that earn their way there, you got to think.
Yeah, you know, and there's, well, with the way the point system is now, too, where you're getting the overtime loss points, it's a lot easier to rack up points than it was back in our day in the 80s.
Because we're old-timers. Yes. We're not going to deny it. Detroit or Washington? Or even the Islanders. Which one of those three comes out of the East to grab the last wild card spot?
I would put my money on the Capitals just because of their pedigree in the postseason. I think they would be best positioned to step up to make it to the Stanley Cup playoffs.
It looks like Dallas and Colorado are going to be battling out in that Central Division to see who has the top record overall. I think even Vancouver played well in their recent homestand, Kevin, going 5-3-1, but that's not good enough when you have 9 games at home. Now they have a lot of road games to close out the season. I think it's really Colorado and Dallas. Who of those two teams, who do you just like more, a little bit more at this time?
You know, I was saying Dallas for a lot of the year, but it seems like the goaltending in Dallas has sagged a bit from what we saw last year, especially what Minnesota saw with Jake Oettinger in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, where I got a feeling Colorado is going to be the better of the two clubs.
You know, it was interesting to me because looking at the scoring now, Kevin, Kucherov there in Tampa Bay looked like he was just an absolute lock for the point total leader. But MacKinnon out there in Colorado now has come up to tie him. You got Connor McDavid right behind him. Well, I mean, what a great scoring race we're even seeing down the stretch.
No doubt. And, you know, it's all very reminiscent of what we used to see. You know, it's fun to see guys getting 100-plus points now, whereas we saw in the, I like to call it the dead puck era of the early 2000s, where it was like teams were only, like, it was a great season if you got, like, 80 or 85 points as a player.
What I like about this, Chase, too, from the Connor McDavid side, we know that he can score goals. He's had some incredible seasons, and he's still putting up pretty solid goal scoring numbers. But boy, the assists, really, this has been such a great playmaker, even I think better than what we've seen in previous seasons. First in assists in 97, but it's like he's setting up those guys in a way, understanding that he's going to draw attention. Teams are trying to shut down his ability to score, and is really, you know, changing his game a little bit to ensure that his team is still able to get goals and racking up a lot of assists this year.
Yeah, Zach Hyman has never had it better with being the beneficiary of a lot of those assists from McDavid.
Yeah, 52 goals. Who'd have thought that when the season began?
No, absolutely nobody.
Absolutely no one. Not even his parents. Sorry. He thought 52 goals were coming off of his stick. I mean, that's just a remarkable number out there. Absolutely remarkable. Well, Kevin, it's the last 2 weeks of the season we have coming down here, and what's kind of a story that you're looking at, you thinking this week that would be interesting to see in the NHL?
I think it's going to be the positioning for playoff spots in both conferences. It's, like I said, you know, in the East, I think anybody can come out of there and make it to the Stanley Cup Finals, and it's going to be interesting to see how everything lays out as far as positioning for the first round, and we're going to just see we'll be seeing some really good hockey in the last couple of weeks as teams jockey for positioning in the standings. I don't know. In the West, I gotta. The one storyline I think there is St. Louis possibly having a chance to catch LA for a playoff spot. And, you know, the Blues are just so confusing. They get shut out on Saturday night at home against San Jose, but then they go and beat LA on Monday night. If they win that game against the Sharks, they're 1 point behind the Kings. So we'll see if the Blues have enough of them to try to catch LA. We'll see if LA manages to stay in the wild card spot or if they can get hot again and pass up Vegas. But whatever happens, I think we're going to see some really good first round matchups.
Yeah, I could not agree with you more. And I think the exciting thing is the playoffs may be 2 weeks away, but I think almost every one of these games down the stretch is going to be like playoff hockey already, because every one of these teams is trying to either ensure they're getting into the playoffs or getting a better spot, because every race seems like nobody is clearly the top is going to win, you know, the top record in either conference right now. You have like four teams that could all claim that in each conference. And so everybody's battling. So it's making for every night matters. And I think that's making this one of the most exciting seasons we've seen in a while.
Yes, it is. And even though they got outshot 32-20, Minnesota pulls out a win against Ottawa to break the Senators' 5-game winning streak.
Well, that's what we like.
You know, we're
see.
Talking so about that fourth line, and Vinny Lettieri gets the game-winning goal from Mason Shaw. Shaw had a goal and an assist in the game. So nice win for Minnesota. A little too late, and I hope it doesn't hurt their draft position too much.
So quickly, 2-0 lead for Minnesota as Mason Shaw and Matt Boldy score. Shaw with his first goal of the season. We love Mason Shaw, so glad to see him getting that goal. Matt Boldy's 26th, Kaprizov with an assist on that. Ottawa does battle back to score 2 goals to tie the game, but it is Vinny Lettieri with a little under 7 minutes to score the game winner. We're going to look quickly here. Goaltending for them was Marc-Andre Fleury with 30 saves on 32 shots against him. So Ottawa with 2 power play goals in the game, Kevin, but hey, 3-2 victory. So pretty exciting win to close out our show for tonight, Kevin.
Imagine that, another story of the year for the Wild, giving up 2 power play goals.
Absolutely. Kevin Lucco, thanks for joining me this week.
My pleasure.